It's called Heart and Sutter. Heart and Sutter flew away and launched into space. There she found the gospel words in the cold machine that is her craft. Now, wishing to leave herself at the mercy of the domain, she sank down with her fiery wings in the hard arms of the sea. And you were beneath the waves, she found it all soft and pregnant with sound. Her lesions healed with many abrasions her neighbors gave her. Weep not. And the soul was struck left of Jamie Jones' locker, and decided there and sent the prey for the young and beautiful. Weep not, I have enough warriors to fail us.
Could you slow it down a bit?
Okay. Honey of affection. Her form, thinner than ice, walks down the road to greet me. Over conversation and lunch, she invites me back. Dinner suits on a splash of cheap perfume. She tells me of one she has always loved. She tells me of trickery she used to catch him in her arms, like the trees catch the winds in their branches. Sour like a remembered kiss, I find myself in my own bed. And to the soundtrack of wind rustling outside, I find the honey of affection wells within and keeps the person from spitting it away into soul and body, to use as articles for the world at large.
And Patricia's first collection is on sale here in Continuity Arts if you want to buy it. And our next reader tonight, all the way from Liverpool, an upcoming poet, Maria Bennett.
Hi, this is only my third public reading. I read this film last week on a course altogether, so I'd like to read four poems. The first one is inspired by Renoir's painting La Danse à Bougival, and the idea is not to replicate the painting but just to get the mood of the dance. Bougival. I have a space to fill left from falling leaves, circling through trees. Nothing takes off from here, nothing sticks. The curtains are mulberry, the walls raspberry. I want you to dance with me. Spin me at Bougival. Put your hand on my bare shoulder, your hand on my shoulder. Daze me. With you, my head turns, spinning fast past mulberry and winter snow. Raspberry's early morning in March shadow. From a place on my birthday, I'm waiting for the only gift I want you to taste. Raspberry's in sun, streaming through gaps in mulberry closed on the longest day of the year when no one died. Okay, this second poem, I'm breaking a rule here. I'm writing about somebody that I know, but this poem is about my father. It's called Teaching My Teacher, and the idea is partly it's about his influence, but also the role reversal that happens when people are older. And my father died when he was 65, so he didn't become very old, but about him. He teaches me skills beyond my years. Dad sat me on his knee at our table, sprinkled with sugar from sweet dark tea. I prayed not to miss a word, watched the brown pools of his eyes, his olive skin, and wished to push my finger in to dimples in his cheek. He fired question after question. I stopped musing on his face to calculate. Relayed answers learned by heart. In the back kitchen after his first stroke, I teach him how to make coconut cake. He is full of pride. Eyes still dark, I draw lines where dimples were.
OK,
Okay, this prayer poem is about my auntie. My auntie was like a mum. She was my dad's sister and lived in the house that we lived in. It was quite crowded with children and my granddad and my auntie. And so I shared a room with her all my life until I went off to university. It was Sunday night and the hospital was short-staffed. Hooked to a drip, she abandons her father's mitzvah ring into my hands, falls back on a pillow and labours whispers that make no sense. At midnight, disturbed from his rest, a priest scurries to her bed. In darkness, at 2 a.m, hot tears slide to my ears, while an on-call surgeon gives her one last chance. I shiver in the heat of June and she's out of it in morphine. After 30 years of daily offerings, when I need God, prayers come cold and rote. Incantations flutter like moths, please remain in my mouth. A knife of light severs pitch as a navy blue voice asks about next of kin. I draw a line across the page and taxi home to my daughters. In the bedroom I shared with her, I open her walnut wardrobe for the first time and travel through her 69 years. Okay, this is the last one now, and sometimes people ask where a poem comes from. And with this one, at first, the start of it was clear. It was two phrases that, one I overheard a woman saying, oh, my greatest wish is to, something about travelling. And I sort of thought, well, we talk about our greatest wish, but what's our least wish? And that sort of was in my mind. And then the other phrase was, I pin all my hopes on, doing whatever. And I had those two things in mind, and I thought of literally, pin all my hopes on, what would it look like if you actually pinned the hopes you have onto a person? Okay, so I pin all my hopes. This is my least wish, to write him out of my life. Droplets float on his skin while I scale him at Sleasmore. Still clothed, I'm baptized in green Atlantic. The words fall from pages. I can't sew them down. The needle is blunt, yet when I grip a sharp one, the eye is blind. Surf rages. I lick thread and want to stitch myself into the poem where he made me. In dreams I trip through sub-black tunnels. Awake, I whisper off shifting sands to keep me sane and pin all my hopes on him, like this. At Keen Bay, through drizzle, I paint washes, all the time chanting his name over colour without music. I dance, but he drowns me in cold silence. Onto his left shoulder, I pin Sheep Haven Bay. Akil sleeps while I'm disturbed from my toss and turn. My life is closing and I am thriving. Time is finite. In the bath, I wash salt from my dress and wring it tight. We have little. We have everything. Winter is ready. I press my feet onto the ground, promise not to swim, but I'm no good without him. The sky is a blue curtain as traffic snores city streets, even at rush hour. Everyone wants sleep. Sun bleaches through. In a black suit, I am stifled. Let me wear green, wash my face in Atlantic salt. And though he can hear, they try to read his hands. The breeze is a warm caress. Pity about the fading light. This is the last time I will suffer. I am a nobody who can hide in pavement cracks while he is showered in my hope.
Thank you, Maria. That's the second of many readings, I'm sure. Our next reader tonight is Kieran McCartan. No. Pardon?
McCartan.
Okay.
There we go. This is just a little lyric about urban streets and wasted youth. These houses our museum with dimmed lights. You have fear, you've done utterly nothing with your life. The faces are long hallways with empty walls, where nothing rises and nothing falls. The cares are mice that flee the scene, from the streets where no one sees what could have been. Never thought she'd walk these streets and see this, a ghost of a life out in the abyss. The feeling, prospect of something not quite bright, the feel of something more than real, in dark a light. A glow moving from station to station, where yours has been shunned by anticipation. This is a poem about a pretty day that happened last summer. So you can remember when there were pretty days around here.
Yeah.
Pretty day for the lavender flowers. The sun shines slowly on the shimmering road. Your bicycle murmurs with the power to set you free and carry your load. The berries are sweet at the side of the highway. The bees and birds are in for a treat. Tickled by the breeze, the trees gently sway. You found a place where all worries retreat. A lily-white moth plays with a colourful butterfly. A busy striped wasp hovers over a leaf. They know not of the world's pain as they fly, without need of wealth and no knowledge of grief. Pretty day for the laughing river. The flow is slow gently over the rocks. On a foul bank, a heron unquivered, tranquil and still as time on the clock. For time hasn't moved since you sat in the sunshine. Your mind is at ease and your conscience is clear. On days like this, when the weather is fine, where in the world would you be but here? You can't think of a place where you've known such peace. The soul unburdened and head light as the breeze. You hope in your heart for this never to cease. Pretty day, but that's just a tease.
Thank you very much, Kieran. And next we have our Poem War Challenge winner, Oliver Barrett.
The same theme, actually, the love poem. Together we walked. My home, take it as your own. Simple changes, bits together outthrown. Oh, now again, to see your face, to touch your cheek and your profile trace, and to your lips shaped like Cupid's bow, the sensuous taste, would I ever know, restrained myself from caution thrown. From my seat, I watch you rest, upon the couch as we talk with zest. My words were of my mind, yet another hoard I held behind. As the time would be deemed inopportune, your voice and sound a beautiful tune, and to it I listened from noon till noon. Eyes seconds fixed and lids open wide, pearl ahead in remaining close with eye. Words appeared now scarcer, next steps taken to embrace her, but in honour and on my heart I placed, my hand and now in regret I faced. When for her and if ever myself I braced. So instead we walked in pouring torrent, like two kids that were out playing truant. It was a probing spell for questions streamed and many answers to tell. The time once again ourselves to relocate, nor dabbling further to the picture paint, the beauty you held, no speck to faint. Then warmed on return with steamy tea, and to her purchase again of consistency. There to doubt of your beauty, but your mind and thoughts gladly through me. My love of you holds no impediment, it's so clear. In my heart I will always hold you dear, together or not, whether we're far or near.
Thank you, Oliver. And next we have Michael O'Sullivan.
this was influenced by rap music, and it's a long one, so I hope you'll be patient. It's about ecology chic, and how the ecology issue has become for commerce and so on, a money spinner rather than what it's supposed to be about. Eco-reality is so relentlessly plucked by celebrities dripping with jewellery, it's the epitome of a new heresy to go in warily instead of merrily. Will we need sorcery to save our greenery, to save our scenery, fishing and forestry? Endlessly currency spent on security, spent on unnecessary bits and accessories, could be so properly spent on zoology, or spent on botany by our citizenry and the authorities, although admittedly they are ridiculously full of reactionaries. So if ain't busted, don't fix it, and if it's fixed, don't bust it. The earth has its justice with a burger but busted. We'll die in a dustbin if we don't reverse it, but politicians are not to be trusted, they've totally lost it. The green gold buzzards have just always lusted after their crusted old crowns that are rusted. Hippie hypocrisies, giant bureaucracies, growing green industries busy as honeybees, spreading like a disease, growing down money trees, peddling luxuries, trendy insanities. What an anomaly looking for remedies. Back in the 70s, it seems like centuries, all the same enemies are for ecology. Eco-reality for an eternity covered its sympathy, respectability, but it's a lottery now if biology's natural symphony has the ability not to go speedily into obscurity. So if it ain't busted, don't fix it, and if it's fixed, don't bust it. The earth has its justice, whether burned or frosted. We'll die in the dustbin if we don't reverse it. The politicians are not to be trusted, they've totally lost it. The greedy old buzzards have just always lost it after their crusted old crumbs are all rusted. It is politically absolute bigotry to be so cynically full of duplicity, to be unethically and indefensibly willing apparently to court publicity. Sustainability is just their policy's susceptibility to popularity. They could so easily target the military, target facilities charged with hostility, but they repeatedly and so predictably downright demonically imitate history, but their morality is still a mystery if they're humanity and see reality. So if ain't busted, don't fix it, if it's fixed, don't bust it. The earth has its justice with a vertical busted. We'll die in the dustbin if we don't reverse it. The politicians are not to be trusted, they've totally lost it. The green gold buzzards have just always lost it after their crusted old crowns that are rusted. Anyway, one more. Do I poetically even have subtlety, or do I clumsily in that it's trendy? Somewhat too groovily, but hardly foolishly, or irresponsibly, or even cruelly. Cool to be zealously full of old purity, though hardly prudery, or yet repressively inclined to piety. With enough urgency, express emergency, though for wordlessly, to be religiously, quite like a deity that moves so silently and rarely violently. So let us fearlessly and unremittingly fight the stupidity and the rigidity. So if it ain't busted, don't fix it. If it's fixed, don't bust it. The earth has its justice, let a barnacle bust it. We'd die in a dustbin if we don't reverse it. But politicians are not to be trusted, they've totally lost it. The greedy old buzzards have just always lost it after their crusted old crowns that are busted.
Good one. Come again. Next we have Death Tiger D.
I don't have to follow that. quite short. And my first time ever reading it out, so. Accented by isolation, each star's lack of movement within this constellation paints a picture of our dire situation, and from this each of us draws our own interpretation. Because this town's absorbing and unnerving nature permits these acts of unseen debauchery and uncensored behaviour. To prevent yourself from this harboured labour, sometimes we look to others for our savior.
Thank you, Ned. And our last reader tonight is Simon Deasy.
I wrote a poem for the 5-word challenge earlier on, but all the poems were really awesome, and they're really kind of on a different tone to mine. They're kind of really uplifting and stuff, and mine kind of for some reason it just came out in the lab, so I thought I wouldn't, but I thought I might as well just read it now, okay?
Yeah.
I'm incredibly self-conscious and apologetic about the title, which is called, it's called My Mum in Intensive Care. My hope rose and was squashed, quashed in the moment reality flooded my mind. My hope broke loose in the moment between waking and eyelids rising. My hope's inception, fed by deception, deceived in the wake of a dream. My hope danced, the music of a man dancing, the music having ended. But the fruit bowl will not be filled for a while, and I know it, and he knows it. He must have known it today, looking out at the line in his shirts that had been drying for hours, and that had never happened before. His heart must long to riot, as does mine, though they both have no choice but to wait. This is called La Terrassage. Shrill horns shot across bonnets, on and on and in with the black petrol-smelling smoke and the heat of the hottest night he passed. Joe flashed by moments, still in dark silhouettes of men passed, set deep in the night and its life that lay by the side of the road. Now the fat, spelt, wine-coloured jeep that he sat in would have sang at him if he had been born one of them. Now, we would have been reminded if he had been there to hear that on Joe went. The warm air rose with the smoke and won. The sweet fuel smoke withered off undone. The last of the day dimmed below. Joe thought for a moment about home and then he awoke. They sprinted on in darts through bumpers that shunted and tuk-tuks that putted frantically on. Joe was carried to their brightly coloured rear. He read in a moment a sign that read, "Thinking of you," and then he was drawn back again. They ran on like that, like salmon sliding sides with salmon. Another sudden acceleration shunted them on, and then the driver's toes were drawn back, and the slightest of G-forces played with their flesh, and on they went, like a current meeting the boulders and shoulders and outcropping ropes of the bank at its side. This is called What Else Is There But Love and Love Disguised. Her eyes shine like roasted chestnuts. "What do you want?" she asks. "For me, love is not a dove, or something clean, or something that's never been sick. Love and other stuff knew me long before I knew them, sitting then as I did, on our green carpet-smelling carpet, my parents and their feet, and wine and tea, above and behind me. 'Who do you like, Simon?' my dad asked. 'No one,' I said, and sunk in my shoulders, sulking. But by then, the Boston Rose had become everything. She had been tap dancing away by Gayburn's side frantically, all clambering parts like a spider in a bath. Within her flaming was, still and unmissable, the most beautiful thing that I had ever seen. Now, she didn't look at all like the ones that I proposed to so far. Like Linda Jordan, or Karen McCarthy, or Deirdre Proud. Maybe if I propose to her, I thought, maybe she'll say yes. Without thinking for at least one moment that something can be everything, anything can feel a lot like nothing. I love her, Dad. I love her, goddammit. I wanted to scream it at him. And we will be married and live in the shed." That's
with our own heating and carpets and TV and everything. And Mum can bring us food. But that's what I wanted to shout in my Ewok jammies. God damn it. I'd have told them, but I didn't. I just sat there dreaming the greatest, most far-reaching dreams ever dreamt, then cemented unquestionably beyond anything resembling doubt right there and then into absolute reality. Now, I guess the exact mechanics of it may not have been thought through. Now, presumably I was going to contact the Boston Roses agent and arrange for him to tell his client, a mid-20s Irish-American model, that she would be moving soon to Cork to live in a shed with me, with her own heating and carpet and TV and everything, without thinking for at least one moment that something can be everything, anything can feel a lot like nothing. Her eyes shone like rubbed chestnuts as she said again, "What do you want?" And then I answered, like a man considering oblivion, dragged back from the light.
Thank you, Simon. That was great. And I think we have one more reader here. I can't remember your name. Would you say your name here?
Yes, that's right.
Poem called Giant, and it's kind of loosely based on somebody that I know or knew, and what's the fiction? Excuse me. I saw a giant of a man brought to his knees by love. I see my poor pilgrim walk across her bedroom floor, and then hands clasped as if in prayer, faithfully holding a copy of A Course in Miracles, apologetic to her that he couldn't be all she ever needed. Love, like a dark and hungry chasm, accepted his sacrifice. Down he slid gracelessly, head split open like a melon, strong neck snapped like a twig on the playground floor one Independence Day. "Oh, Dixon, I will not knock on your door. Your mother's words ring around pained, like these pained ears, that he gave her such a hard life. I see he gave his, and he gave her everything she desired, in his desperation to be approved of and loved. A blinded eye gazed at all her indiscretions, and saw nothing but her lilies and her roses, her colours and her curves, mesmerised, maybe spellbound. Winning silly, pickled big boy, pickled and medicated in pain. The house in Victorian suburbia, done to near perfection, place in the Pyrenees, all stained in his blood, spilt with generosity and love, a place to house that new lover before a single weed poked from his grave, poor bastard. If he could, he would have given her them all anyway. This was the only way he saw. Shamed his memory, unfaithful to the end, our man does not rest in peace in any way I think of him. His debt to pay must be huge, undued by her, as so insignificant. Not my place to understand, maybe, or question or judge. Unfaithful am I to remain silent. I feel such shame for her disrespect that idiot journalist reports on her conquest of Mr. Semi-Famous. Yes, the one that could pass for her father's twin. I feel for his father to have to absorb these slaps, and still smile at her for the sake of his grandson. What price the fame she craves? I hope it's all worth it. It will not buy her an ounce of peace. People ask about her all the time. They feel such pity for all her hard luck. It oozes from their eyes. God help her, she was asked to cope with a lot. It's true, she was. Karma is not something funny. Our actions are only our only true possessions. And we are all on our journey home. Back to one, no separation, all one. Nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists. Nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists. I hear him say over and over, over and over, herein lies the peace of God. I miss him in all the places I go that I know he would have liked too. I know I abandoned him when I got bogged down and lost on my own road, got distracted, and he just slid away. No bitch's milk can bring him back, nor soothe what ails him. His labour now is pushing daisies to the yellowy, stony soil of Kentrigan. What goes on in other realms is really all speculation. I pray often for his peace, as I recall his lovely smile. Thank you.